Yeah, the borrowed title, of course. Actually, if I start borrowing titles, I can start also with a quotation, although I didn't intend to, but somehow. There is a verse, let me remember. So the verse is this. The stimulated radiation of cosmic medium affords a fascinating occupation for proletarians and lords. Vladimir Nabokov, the author, with a small help from me. The topic of my talk is basically an attempt to solve the cosmological constant problem. I know that many people don't consider it as a problem at all and claim that entropic principle solves this problem. They may be right. Entropic principle solves many problems, maybe even the state budget. but I will take, nevertheless, so maybe they're right, but I will take an old-fashioned approach and try to solve this problem, try to develop some apparatus and some ideas which can solve eventually this problem and maybe lead to some insights concerning inflation. I will begin with a simple physical, a very elementary physical ideas, and then I will try to add some mathematics into it. Let's remember what happens in the electric field when we have the Schwinger process. So imagine one-dimensional constant electric field. Created by two charges at infinity. Now we all know that after Schwinger that the pair will be created. How to see this? An elementary way to see this is that we have that scalar potential which is equal to electric field multiplied by Z, and the Klein-Gordon equation. Is a Klein-Gordon operator is omega minus k square minus m square equal to zero. So we get omega equal to z plus square root of k square plus m square. And you see that it's energetically possible to create pairs which will fly in this direction and screen the charges. So electric field will be, we draw two conclusions, which are, of course, well known, then that, first of all, if you keep electric field fixed, there will be instability, particle will be created and created and created. And moreover, it is possible to show if I have time, I will probably discuss it later. This is kind of unknown, I think, that the current grows linearly with time with some very interesting coefficient, but I will not, that's somewhat of a digression from the main line, from my main line. Now, consider a similar thing in the De Sitter space. Usually we write the metric of the De Sitter space in a way, let's still keep 1 plus 1 dimension, dx square minus dt square. And it's if you introduce, this is, I'm also not going to say anything new at this point, I just want to set the stage. So let's introduce the physical coordinate. X is a co-moving coordinate. Physical coordinate is this. If you plug it in, you get the metric, and a very simple metric simply that it will be dy minus h dt square minus dt square. And if you write the Klein-Gordon equation for this metric, you will discover that omega is equal to momentum pz plus square root of p square plus m square. And you see that for the same reason, the only difference with electric field, here it was a constant, here it is the momentum operator. So for the same reason, you expect production of particles. They are energetically permitted. And that's related in a more slightly more mathematical way. There is a nice theorem by Wigner that in the when you have de Sitter symmetry, the group cannot have the de Sitter group cannot have it's purely kinematical. It cannot have representations with the lowest weight. So you never have conserved quantities which are bounded from one side. And that's the concrete example we see here. And clearly, you just need to separate particles a little bit, and it will be fine with energy. So now, what it has to do with the cosmological constant? How to describe screening? What is the analog of screening which we have here? Here, I suppose we all agree that there's the problem is completely solved, and no one doubts that the electric field will be eliminated by this process. The point which I'm going to make is that there's a strong analogy between electric field and the curvature, and positive curvature. Positive curvature will be analogous to the electric field, while negative curvature will be analogous to the magnetic field. And negative curvature, ADS, is stable, and there's nothing happens there. But in DS, things are interesting. So what we have to look at what happens to the, let's imagine that we have accelerated universe, we have accelerated expansion, and we start this particle production. I can usually there is some people have some feeling that there is particle production. However, the produced particles are diluted when the universe expands. This is not so. Then their production because of simple kinematical reasons, which we will see, the production is exactly tuned up to the expansion. So there's eventually this expanding universe will be covered with particles. The word maggots come to my mind. now. you have this expanding universe, but these produced particles, they attract each other. And so what their back reaction effect, it's natural to expect that it will be just decrease of acceleration. Because acceleration is produced by the cosmological constant, which is kind of repulsive, but it's counteracted by this attracting interaction. These are the qualitative reasons to expect that particle production and that there is instability. First, that there is instability of the pure de Sitter space. Yes, please.
So far, everything you've said applies to a free scalar field.
Yes.
So you're claiming that for even a free scalar field, there would be an instability for the cosmological constant?
No. For the free scalar field, the effect will be small. Well, if the mass of this scale, free scalar, if the mass is much smaller than the Planck constant, the effect will be negligible. The back reaction will be. You see, we need, actually, as I'm running slightly ahead of myself, but we need not simply no dilution of produced particle, but we need actually the rate of production must be faster than expansion. And for free field, it's the same. Yes, please.
And you also need a way for the pair production to affect later particles. In the electric field, the field whose magnitude decreases when every pair is created.
Yes.
But in the cosmological constant, it's a constant in the Lagrangian. There's no.
Oh, well, it's not. It's a, no, no. It's not a constant in Lagrangian. That's yeah. That's an illusion. It's a cosmological constant is the expectation value of curvature. That's how it should be defined. And this curvature is affected. So you have the vacuum, and you have to take the expectation value because. You see, if it is a constant in Lagrangian, it's, well, anyway, I think it's good enough to define it as an expectation value of the curvature. And so now let's see what we know. Let's formalize a little bit the ideas of stability and instability. First of all, I want to notice that there are, we don't really know, there's no, so to say, no way, we don't really know how to quantize gravity even semi-classically in the following sense. It seems semi-classically things are simple, that we just take the classical metric, we add a perturbation, or we add some scalar field for simplicity, and then we simply have to use Feynman diagrams with a propagator which satisfies the covariant Klein-Gordon equation. The first point with which we immediately encounter is that we don't really know. There are many different propagators, and we don't know which one to choose. And what we need some principles which will determine the right propagator. And we actually can have two different propagators. First of all, let's define the in and out states in the De Sitter space by imagining that the curvature is adiabatically off at plus infinity, at minus infinity. It's precisely like here. We also can, if we. We can imagine that electric field is adiabatically turned on. It persists for some time, and then it's turned off. And then we just take measurements. We now define the vacuum, the in vacuum at time minus infinity, as a Minkowskian state with no particles. And then we take measurements at plus infinity, and we get this. So in this way, we can define the same thing with.
And excuse me.
Yes, please.
You wish to turn on just the expanding part of the curvature, or turn it on contracting and then let it extend again?
Well, we need actually, we will need both, and the Green functions are different in these two cases. And yes.
Just to orient myself, so there are standard calculations of, say, tensor fluctuations in inflationary cosmology, which
yes.
are very much.
Yes.
Same kind of thing.
Yes.
Are you proposing something that you think matches these discussions?
Yes, it matches.
Different?
Yes, yes, yes. I'm now, it certainly matches. It just tells you of different options. The philosophy is like that. We don't really know. We have to look at all possible embeddings of the sitter space into flat, into Minkowski space. Let me make one more point here. You see, the when we have just pure geometry, it's very well known that you can have flat coordinates, you can have positive curvature coordinates or negative curvature coordinates, k equals 0, 1, and minus 1 in Friedman universe. And they are completely equivalent. Now, when you embed the big patch of such space into Minkowski space, they are not equivalent anymore. If you assume that Minkowski space in the past is in the vacuum, then you turn on the scale factor, then you turn it off, and you get some. You get different results in these three different cases. But at the moment, let's consider the expanding universe. And in the expanding universe, I don't think I
Sorry, are you turning it on and off by hand, or are you
by hand, yes.
This by a scalar potential?
Well, you see, for instance, I will be a good way to turn it on and off is to write down all equation. So we have the Hubble constant. And let's assume that it depends on T divided by capital T. And this capital T, as capital T goes to infinity, H is equal to 0. And at 0, it's equal to a constant. This is the, it's the same as turning electric field.
But you're not accomplishing this by some source that...
Well, I'm not considering source. It's an external field. It's just in my. So to answer your question, yes, by hands. It's just I just want to study this geometry when it is. You see, to have an ambiguous definition of field theory in the curved space, it's a little bit like to have definition of energy and momentum in curved space. To have these definitions, you need asymptotically flat boundary conditions. Then you simply measure. You have some. You need a quiet haven where to put your measuring devices, and safe haven. And same with particles. You just look at this Minkowski space vacuum, and this also explains why. It sets error of time when you say that at minus infinity, Minkowski vacuum is the vacuum. And then at plus infinity, you will find a lot of particles and entropy in this state. Okay, I'm moving too slowly, I'm afraid. So
there's no time cutoff in this.
Ah. Oh, that's good. but is there error of time?
I think there's another diversion.
Well, I'm really sorry to slow you down. Just one more question along the line.
Yeah, sure.
Steve's and
sure.
What you just said. So, again, in the standard inflationary calculations, one matches to the Minkowski vacuum by saying that the modes are very short at the beginning, and so they don't see the Hubble curvature scale. And so they're in the Minkowski vacuum for that reason, not because you turn on and off Hubble, but because
It's not quite so, because you see, at short distances, whatever propagator you look at very short distances, it satisfies, it will be the same as Minkowski propagator.
Right.
So it's not quite the same
thing. So as a function of time, that happens automatically for modes in De Sitter, right?
What?
So the added thing in De Sitter is that the modes stretch and contract as a function of
time. Yes.
So, as you go back in time, they contract.
Yes.
So it's time dependently. They realize their Minkowski vacuum in the far past, without you having to change the curvature.
You see, it's a little bit. I don't see. Well, maybe you can put it this way. It's, but. the vacuum, which consists of all possible, you need the vacuum, which is a full Fock space, define the full Fock space. And basically, we are talking about mode expansion, so you have some scalar field, you expand it in modes. The question is what to do with these modes. And what I'm saying is simply that when you turn the curvature off, this mode will go to the plane wave with positive frequencies. You can, in fact, it immediately selects in inflation case and other cases. These functions are just Bessel functions, Bessel or Hankel functions. And you select the Hankel function of k divided by a of t, because at large k, it is a pure exponential. It is k e to the minus t or something. Now, what you can show is that you can, the words which you said probably mean that you want this positive, you want this function. Now, I'm just adding that in the physical interpretation of this function is the following, that if you now turn off the curvature, this exponential will match the plane wave without curvature in Minkowskian plane wave. So you can just trace it that with adiabatical switching, there will be no particle production coming from the switching of this field. So I'm not, yeah.
There's no particle production coming from adiabatically switching on the curvature.
Yes, and
switching
off.
Switching it off is more difficult, I think.
No.
So the ones are a little larger.
The what? No, if you actually have, well, you can show that if you have a scale factor like that, then for all modes, then there is no particle production when you go. Well, you will get the standard result. There will be no particle production on both ends. But let me move a little bit because I feel I stuck. Okay, so the first suggestion which I want to make is that there is a unique way to define the in-out Green function, namely the Green function which matches this in and out vacuum, defined as I said. Actually, Eva is right that I can avoid this adiabatic. It's like in quantum field theory. We can do it with adiabatic turning on and off, or we can try to do it without it. But it's just easier to visualize with adiabatic turning on and off. It's not a matter of some principle. But now the principle which I want to use is that this Green function is the sum over path connecting so this is a Feynman Green function basically, and how to select this function the way to select it I think is to find the solution of the Klein-Gordon equation, which when time-like separation goes to infinity, proportional to the thing like that, where L is the geodesic distance between the two points. This is what happens. This is, of course, the answer in the Minkowski space. But in the space with curvature, you usually general propagator has two exponentials, plus and minus. And this is, I think, the definition which is applicable in for more or less general curved spaces. Now, from this.
Now, what is that?
Yes.
So you say that, but why? Why is it?
Well, then we have to start asking why quantum mechanics. Because it's quantum mechanics.
If you violate
the path,
I mean, the first quantized interpretation,
yes. What
goes wrong?
If I do what?
If you have a definition of a propagator,
yes,
different. Can't be written as a sum over a first quantized path, what goes wrong?
I think what goes wrong is the condition that you cannot, one of the principles of quantum mechanics is that you can take, if you have some manifold, a field in manifold, and you have field at the boundary, the superposition principle, which leads to path integral, is that you can glue together the two things. So we take two disks, for example, you can take two disks and glue. You have field theory on a half sphere with certain values of field here, and we can get the field theory on a sphere by multiplying these two things and integrating over. What I'm saying is simply in quantum mechanics is the statement for the evolute propagator, which is e to the iht, that it is k f x1 t1 k f1 x prime t minus t1 and dx1. So, and this, it is from this relation, from this composition, we derive path integral. When we split it more, we can split the interval from 0 to t on two pieces here, on 4, on 3, 4, and so on. And that's the way we get path integral. So now I'm saying that if you have two exponential, this principle will be wrong. I will explain why. It will be wrong in the non-complex spaces. Actually, it's very easy to see why it is going. Why it will be wrong? It will be wrong because when you have the, you have to look at the composition of this composition principle. In the case of relativistic theory, it amounts to the statement that if you take the derivative with respect to m square, then it is equal to g x x1 g x1 x prime dx1 integrated over m. And it is from this expression we derive path integral. And I would take it as a definition of quantum mechanics. Now, imagine, for example, that you have, for a moment, that you have two exponentials. Then you have terms like that. In the product. And the integral when x1 goes to infinity will diverge. You see, when you have only one exponential, this is a convergent integral. However, because it oscillates. However, when you have these two exponential Green functions, the whole thing is gets destroyed. I'm going to discuss concrete propagators in the standard propagator in the de Sitter space actually destroys this, and it should be it. This propagator, which is called the Bunch-Davis propagator, or in fact, it's Bunch-Davis vacuum. It has its meaning. However, it's not the in-out propagator. Yes. Statement is that the Bunch-Davis propagator does not satisfy this relation, and it cannot be interpreted as an in-out propagator. So you cannot really use Feynman diagrams with a Bunch-Davis propagator. And basically, maybe to make things. Yeah, please.
Yes, so I understand that this picture holds only if m is larger than a certain value.
Yes. Well, yeah. Well, this picture holds more or less always, but in fact, what my results actually will hold only in the limit which you mentioned, that the mass should be greater than some value, so that you have oscillating behavior. So there are heavy models. It's in the mathematical terms. It's the principle. What I will be discussing all the time: the principal series of representation of the de Sitter, the supplementary series, and the discrete series. That's a separate matter, which is quite interesting, but I will not touch.
I was kind of wondering if somehow in-out perturbation theory doesn't exist for those lower mass.
For lower mass, there are many different infrared divergences. Some of them will be present always. Some of them are present only when the mass is smaller than something. Let me postpone the answer to this question. So basically the answer was that let's better keep ourselves in principal series. We will have enough trouble with it. Okay. And one more thing, which is that it is a finite propagator, and it's very easy to find it explicitly in the de Sitter space, the propagator which satisfies this composition rule. And there is another propagator, which the easiest, which I think first written by Tagirov and Chernikov, which is that, which is called Bunch-Davis propagator, which is simply analytic continuation of the propagator from the sphere. It is proportional to the in 1 plus 1 for simplicity, but that's not really important. It's just proportional to Legendre function, which depends on Z, where Z, now let me describe my notations. N is the unit vector, so N square, which is N square minus N0 square is equal to 1. You see that you get a sphere if you continue N0 to IN0. And correspondingly, I have Z as a scalar product of two of the two vectors. And Z is actually nothing but hyperbolic cosine of the geodesic distance between two points. So these are my notations. Now, the Legendre polynomial, if you take it at large Z, it will contain two terms, plus and minus. And so this definitely cannot be cannot be understood as a finite propagator. So, which already means that we have instability in the de Sitter space, because it already means, although it doesn't say which one, but it means that in Green function is not equal to in out Green function. I probably should add one more thing. I should have said that why I'm saying that this is in. Although it is, I think, more or less common consensus that this should be an in propagator. But just to strengthen it a little bit, I can show that if you indeed start with adiabatically with Minkowski space and up with the Minkowski space, then you will get in the middle, you will get this Bunch-Davis propagator. But I don't think that will surprise anyone. What is important, and there's nothing especially new in this statement, but there is something new in this statement. Namely that we see that while Feynman propagator satisfies this, Feynman propagator is actually the second Lejeune polynomial. And this guy is it indeed has indeed satisfies this relation. It has only one exponential in asymptotic behavior. So the statement is, let me make the statement more precise. If you have a hyperboloid and you take the sum or pass between two points, you will get the Q function, not the P function. Okay, and then more or less definition of stability or instability. What do we call stable vacuum? It's basically the vacuum in which in propagator is equal to the in out propagator. Yes, please.
So one way of looking at this is you start with some vacuum, you have some time dependent background, you produce some particles, and so the outgoing state is not the out vacuum. And that's a very simple-minded way of saying what's going on. Why is it more than that somehow?
You see, it's a little bit more than that because it means that the number of particles produced, that these produced particles are not diluted. You see, you have actually changed the system. So you can put it this way, of course, or you can actually use stay in this case. There's no time dependence, it's purely Z dependence, it's just different gauge. It's just compare it with the, I'm saying there's no difference with the Schwinger case. If you consider just pair production, you can put it in different words, but basically what happens is that electric field produced particles. And here, the curvature produced particles. I'm not saying anything more than that. And you may consider this trivial, and I would even agree with that. But
so far, you haven't considered interactions.
Yes.
You can't really say that the state has changed. You're just
You can say by
it's changed in this sense.
If you take my definition of adiabatic turning on and off, what I see is that the out state is completely different from the in state.
So. Coming back to the analogy with inflation, once you exit from inflation, you expect modes to come in again to the Hubble patch. And it's true that you kept replenishing the supply because modes kept freezing out at Hubble, and now they're coming in once you exited from inflation. Is that?
Exited by hand, and also, you see, there's in inflation after you get some non-trivial factor A of t. Here, I by hand saying that let's look at the Minkowski scale.
Well, I guess all I'm trying to ask is if the particles that you're producing are being produced because they're coming back into the horizon because of the exit from inflation, that would be a different statement from the statement that something was happening during inflation causing a radical
Let me say, so here we have positive curvature, and then we have particles created, particles created in the actually, it's very easy to see where the particles are created. You see, you have the Klein-Gordon equation, which is roughly speaking something like that. K is a co-moving momentum. And particles are created, then the WKB, you have the de Broglie wavelength. The WKB approximation breaks down when this becomes of the order of 1, and that means that K is of the order of MA of T. So the mode k gets excited at the moment t as a of t expands, you have you create mode after mode after mode. Now, at the end, you end up with what I call the Bose C, the all states with k smaller than m a of t are filled. While what I'm saying is that it all continues at the large time you fix a at infinity and the process stops. You created all these modes, and that's it. In inflation, there's a dynamics which follows. A of infinity is not a constant, but it continues to change, and so you return back into horizon and so on. It's not what's happening here. You're just excited modes. You have oscillators corresponding to the modes, and you excited all the modes of this thing.
But you turned off the curvature by hand.
Yes. Yes. You just in the same sense, in the same way you turn off interaction by hands in quantum field theory to define.
You're trying to show that this particle production will turn off the curvature.
What?
I thought you were trying to argue that the particle production will turn
off. But that will happen when we start discussing interactions. So far, I'm saying that the vacuum is not preserved. This Minkowski vacuum is not preserved. Yes.
But following up on Steve's comment,
yes.
I mean, we know that whenever you have any time dependent space time,
yes.
you're going to get particle creation.
Yes.
So, I mean, usually that's finite. You know, you get some finite number of particles
yes.
created.
Yes.
Some localized.
Yes. Yes. Exactly. So,
but still, your in and vacuum would not be the same as your in out.
Yes. Yes. I understand your question. The thing is that what we will get in a moment is that this is proportional e to the minus volume of ds. So in general, as you said, it's just some local phenomena, this particle production, so you will have something. But here, because of de Sitter symmetry, we will get essentially the imaginary part of the cosmological constant. This process generates the imaginary part of the cosmological constant. I'm coming to this. I actually haven't said anything important so far, except that I notice explicitly that this in function is different from in out function.
Sorry, to,
yes.
Hubble would come into this actually, wouldn't it?
The what?
You didn't express this in terms of Hubble, but in terms of AMT.
Yes.
But,
yes. Actually, it's for exponential a of t, it is more or less the same. If you take a of t, it's a simple exercise to see that that phi will be I omega t is a positive frequency solution at minus infinity, and it's you have a mixture of positive, negative frequencies at plus infinity, and this mixture of frequencies happens when de Broglie wavelength is minus one of this thing. It happens when WKB is violated, and it's violated at the moment when the particle leaves the horizon. It crosses the horizon. Anyway, let me move a little bit. Now I want to look at the following. I want to pose the following question. So suppose we have this Bunch-Davis vacuum. And we have, on the top of this Bunch-Davis vacuum, we have states. So we expand phi, as usual, as creation annihilation operators. And these are Fs, are modes, solutions of these Klein-Gordon equations. And we now want to see what happens when you add the interaction. And moreover, we want to see what happens when we take the matrix element of vacuum-vacuum matrix element of this interaction. So once again, we adiabatically turn on phi to the 4 interaction, and we want to see what happens to the vacuum energy. This is in. But this is equal by definition out 0 in. So it's a 0, 0 matrix element of the. Well, so let's try to get the idea what's happening here. If we try to calculate it in the, as you see from here and from this propagator, if you take n0 equal to in4, we get precisely the sphere. And it just becomes a sphere. The propagator is just a weak rotation from a sphere by which we perform by doing this. So one might think that we can calculate a weak rotated free energy. So the first non-trivial contribution to this thing, if we write it down as e to the iw, the first non-trivial contribution is this diagram. And you see that if we calculate this is point n1 on hyperboloid, this is the point n2. And the diagram is equal to integral dn means you have to integrate, say, d5n and delta n square minus n0 square minus 1, the usual invariant measure on hyperboloid. It's well defined. I will not fix the dimension here, just dn. So we have integrals dn1, dn2, and the fourth power of the Green functions, n1 and 2. We notice immediately that because of the de Sitter symmetry, it's just the volume of de Sitter multiplied by dn, and I have to fix the vector here, and star is a fixed vector. The integral will not depend on it, and that's basically the correction to the vacuum energy. This is what we get. Now, if we calculate it on a sphere, if we assume that we can perform the weak rotation, we can calculate it on a sphere. The Green function on a sphere, on the Euclidean sphere, is real. And we get some real result, which will be completely uninteresting, and which is standard situation, that we have some infinite correction to the effective matrix element, but it doesn't enter anywhere. It is not really physical. Now, the first observation which I want to discuss is the following. We have a concrete integral. We can do this integral. The statement is that the integral is complex. We have to define now in the de Sitter space. Now I'm gradually coming to really important things. Or you can forget what all I was saying before. Define it in the de Sitter space. I should be more careful and add I zero. And so we have a very concrete integral to deal with. We just can choose n as some typical vector like that. And you will get the integral dn1. I will not probably go into calculational detail, just that you can see that if, say, in one dimensions, you have, if we introduce the variable z, you can go from the integrating over n to integrating over z. And you will get integral over dz from minus infinity to plus infinity of the thing like a logarithm of z squared minus 1 g to the 4 of z in 1 plus 1 dimension, and similar formula in other dimensions.
Are you using what you call the final propagator or the bunch Davis?
The bunch Davis, yes, because I'm considering that's natural in this setting, because you see I'm looking at in matrix element here. So it's in matrix element. And just let me tell you that after some analytic changes of contours, et cetera, we find the abstraction to weak rotation. And that, I think, is important. That is, in the curved space, you cannot always do the weak rotation. There is an abstraction here. At the same time, at least in odd dimensions, you have the effective action, which is contains real part and imaginary part. That's what you find after some. I will be happy to, but it will take too much time to go through all these contours. Yeah, there are some difference between odd and even dimensions in analytic continuation, which I will probably refer to it. But let me just tell you the answer. In even dimensions, the answer is more complicated. But in odd dimensions, you have real part and imaginary part. And real part is precisely what you would get by weak from a sphere. So if you perform the weak rotation, you will get a real part of the effective action, which is infinite because of some obvious ultraviolet divergences. As usual in vacuum energy. But it's real and it's precisely the same as on a sphere. The imaginary part is finite, and it is the abstraction to weak rotation. So which also shows that there is practically no overlap between in vacuum and out vacuum. But this happens when you in.
Sorry, it's
when
you finite.
What?
It's finite.
It's finite, but it's proportional to the volume. I mean, divided by the volume. By finite, I mean it has no ultraviolet divergences. You see, you have, in this diagram, you have, of course, at short distances, propagators are, as Eva said, is the same as a flat space. So you have some x1 minus x2 to the eighth power, so it diverges like mad. But now this is so. If we start, it's not completely clear how can we use the imaginary contribution to the cosmological constant, but it is clear that what it means, it's like precisely the imaginary energy which you get for, say, unstable nuclei, if you calculate in a similar way the energy of unstable nuclei, you will clearly get imaginary part of energy, and it should be interpreted as a lifetime of this. Yes, yes.
By unitarity, this means that, so this is imaginary part of the forward scattering diagram in a way. And so this means that the vacuum can decay before scalar particles.
You are absolutely right, yes.
Yes. That actually can be seen very easily if you're working sort of that picture. So you just calculate the vacuum to for the scalar particle.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Another comment is
I agree with that. I did this. Yes.
Another comment is that this the same thing happens if you for lambda 5 square interaction. And that only so the in out overlap will be zero.
Yeah.
Theory. You mean just a free massive field?
Yes, that's right.
Free massive field. Yes.
So in that case, so what you're doing really is that you're doing perturbation theory in the wrong mass.
Yes.
So
well, of course, if you start changing mass adiabatically, uh-huh. you will end up in a different vacuum. Yes, that's true. Because this vacuum is extremely sensitive. It's
so my comment is somehow in this trivial theory you get the same thing, and if you work in a true theory, you know that there is nothing.
Oh no, but it depends. No. I think I would say that. If you start with a mass and you turn it on adiabatically, you indeed will change the state. Yeah. So.
But if you are in an eternal Petita space,
yeah,
then all you're doing in this phi to the square theory,
yeah,
but you're just doing a wrong perturbation theory. So,
I don't know. Are you saying that if I include higher corrections, it
right.
will change
you get
it?
Right, theory, if you want
to. No, I don't think. I think it depends if you have the mass from the very beginning being fixed. It's not the same as having the mass.
That's true.
The mass which is.
But you're not talking about changing the mass. You're talking about breaking up the mass into a free mass and a perturbation.
Yeah.
You can always reorganize your Lagrangian to get the exact.
Yeah, but the point is that the mass is time dependent. The point is that the system breaks down adiabatic invariance when it is in the de Sitter space. That you can have, it's like, you know, when you have a many body system, you calculate the density correlation, and then in the limit, you have it's what happens in Fermi liquid theory. Then, it depends on omega and k. If you tend omega first to zero, you get one answer, which is compressibility. If you send k to zero first, and then omega to zero, you get zero. And this is related to the fact that you have masses, singularity at zero frequency here, and the same thing happens to de Sitter. I will try to explain it. So it is. It's not a. I agree with the first part of what you said, but don't think I agree with the second part. It's a really physical effect that the mass slowly changing mass changes the state. Okay. I actually took the comment that there was no time limit literally. All right. Now, what can we do with it? We can now try to calculate the following, we see that the vacuum decays, is able to decay onto, indeed, the point is actually probably this obstruction to the weak rotation should have been expected, because there is no conservation law which forbids the imaginary part of this thing. But what it means? It means that a vacuum doesn't make sense. It means that you have to consider the states with arbitrary occupation numbers, not the vacuums. The states which are obtained by acting on the you act with the asthmatics. By asthmatics, I mean this thing. You act on the state with fixed occupation number, and you get some other state. And how to solve such problems in the case of weak interaction? In the case of strong interactions, we don't know how to solve such problems. In the case of weak interactions, the way to proceed is the Boltzmann equation, is kinetic theory. Put it in a nutshell, what I'm claiming is that if you introduce, suppose we have the occupation number corresponding to which depend on the co-moving momenta, okay, and then the Boltzmann equation, we write it down as the time derivative of this occupation number is what is called the collision integral. The collision integral, I'm writing the answer. I will try to explain in a moment how it was obtained, but the answer is the collision integral is integral of the basically the same diagram, except that one of the momenta is fixed. Okay. It's either this diagram or diagram where one particle is the external. Now, this is a more or less standard collision integral. You have to take the k, k1, k2, k3. K3, you take the integral, delta of k minus sum of k. And you have here, for this diagram, it's just the number of particle, which depends on k, multiplying by n of k1, n of k3. That's the standard form of minus the terms where you replace n's by 1 plus n's. N to 1 plus n. This is the one term in the collision integral. The only non-standard thing here, gamma, is the product of the Hankel's function integrated over time. So basically, this has physical interpretation that the particle with momentum k decays on particles with momentum ki, and we have this collision integral. There's another term where the vacuum decays, and one of the particle has momentum k. In this case, we have more interesting contribution, like one. It contains only one terms, like one plus n, because we have vacuum decay and the same thing. This kinetic equation, it's unusual. It's on one hand, it's similar to many well-known Boltzmann equation, but it's unusual because there's no conservation of energy here. Energy is not conserved, you see? And if you think of, in the usual Boltzmann equation, we have H theorem, which tells us that the entropy grows and it approaches the equilibrium value. So there's collision integral is always zero when you have both a distribution in the standard case. In this case, it is not, because if you look at the derivation of H theorem, you will see that in conservation of energy is extremely crucial in this case, and you can.
What happens if you work in the static patch of this iteration?
Yes. If you work in the static patch, there is conservation of energy.
Yeah.
Or if I can even work in the expanding patch, still conserving energy. But this energy is not positive definite.
But it is in a static patch.
What?
It is in a static.
Yeah, yeah. But okay. So probably I answered wrongly. But what I want to say is that, as I wrote the metric in physical coordinates, which is stationary, which doesn't depend on time, energy is conserved here, and it precisely covers the expanding universe. So I can rephrase it in terms of conserving energy. However, energy is not positive, and as a result of this non-positivity, H theorem will break down. You will simply don't get. You can get formal. There will be divergences and everything is collapsed. So for H theorem, positivity of energy is extremely important. And this type of kinetic equations, they appear in theory of so-called weak turbulence. When you have waves on the water or in plasma, the field becomes essentially classical, because what I'm going to say next is that the relevant occupation number will be very large. So it is essentially the classical wave field. And in this classical situation, there are things like development of singularities is rather typical. There's a so-called self-focusing or Langmuir collapse and so on. There are many cases when there's an explosion. Actually, I found the solution of this kinetic equation, which reveals this explosion which describes very large occupation numbers. The solution.
Is there a fixed point?
It could be, but at least in perturbation, I don't know how to go beyond perturbation, beyond small coupling. In the small coupling, what I get is very simple. If you just it's very peculiar. The equation, the kinetic equation, is solved by what I called Bose C. Namely, it's a step function of ma of t minus k. And so you have all modes occupied up to this point, and then this boundary moves. This is also encountered in the theory of turbulence, such behavior, and it's called the inverse cascade. In turbulence.
So m becomes 1?
M is, I assume that m is, it's m.
It's a step function?
It's essentially a step function, yes.
The normalization?
The normalization is just that you have d3k, d3k of n of k, it actually proportional to a to the cube of t. And this is compensated in the to calculate physical quantities, like physical densities, you have to add some factors of a in front. It's the relation between co-moving density and physical density contains some factor of a, and they precisely cancel each other. So essentially, the correction to physical density energy, if we calculate, say, T0, 0, we get the correction, which is proportional to N of T. I'm sorry, I have to add N of T here. I can show how these things are really derived and what it means, but let me say the following, that this is obtained, indeed, the collision integral is very much like the beta function it appears here actually as a coefficient, time appears as a coefficient as a logarithmic divergence of this integral and so on. So it's very much like the beta function. And what I wrote down is the lowest order of this beta function. So C of n is actually a n plus 1 to the 4th minus n to the 4th. And it's always positive. We have a simple differential equation which describes the explosion. What I don't, and this explosion is basically the laser effect, because you have just amplificational waves coming from these Bose factors. What I don't know is what happens in higher orders. It could be that the effect will be canceled, but I don't think so. But so far, I can say only that it's in the order of lambda square. So that's an important point. I think that we have this explosion. And the last comment which I will make, and then we'll probably, is the way how kinetic, the meaning of the kinetic equation in terms of the diagrams. It's kind of a general statement. You see, if we consider, suppose we consider now theory in the flat space with non-trivial occupation numbers. The propagator for free particles will be 1 over n. Here we have p square minus m square plus I0 plus n. Or minus n, I guess, p square minus m square minus I0. This is what will happen for free particle. Now imagine for one moment that n may depend on p. N are occupation numbers, so they depend on p. That's what I'm talking once again about in about a flat space. Now imagine that you use this formula either in Feynman diagrams or in the Schwinger-Kelder diagrams. If you use it in Feynman diagrams, then what you get is a terrible infrared divergence, kinematical infrared divergence, which I will explain in a moment. You get it in a very simple way. When you calculate this correction, you will get terms which contain p square plus I0 here. It's the same story as with two exponentials at the beginning of the talk, minus I0 here. So you have this product of these factors in coordinate space. It's just linear divergence in time. And what is the meaning of this linear divergence in time? It's very simple. It simply says that if at the initial moment you have these occupation numbers, but interaction change them, obviously, and change them at constant rate. And because of that, you get a correction linear proportional to time. But there are special cases in which interaction preserves them. If you calculate the coefficient in front of this linear divergence in time, the coefficient will be precisely the collision integral. You can calculate the collision integral by simply extracting the coefficient in front of the linear time. The collision integral is zero, is the condition for the steady state distribution. And that's precisely how it arises here. So here, the fact that we see the linear divergence in such diagrams follows from the fact from what I was saying about two exponentials at the beginning, and I will finish at this point. if you calculate a diagram like that, you easily see that you get linear divergence of the same kind as this diagram is linear divergent for the same reason. I shall explain why it is linear divergent. And for the same reason that G contains two exponential. So there will be always interference, destructive interference between the two exponential, which will result in the linear divergence. So you see that now ends are starting to come together, and we are really starting to get the picture, namely that we have to study the kinetics of the produced particles, and because n of t has a singularity, it's in this approximation, it's something like that.
What's Tc?
Tc is just some critical time which is determined by the interaction. It's just the differential equation is this. It's just dm dt. There's the constant, which is the square of this interaction amplitude, which is calculable and finite and well defined. 1 plus n to the 4 minus n to the 4.
Just to check, so this is a contribution to the n in correlator?
What?
The bubble you've drawn with the.
This one.
Up to the left. Yeah.
This one. Yeah. This is the contribution. Exactly. This is the contribution to in in correlator. Yes. 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 And in what I want to stress that the theory that it's for massive theory. The theory is massive. Nevertheless, I get the infrared divergence in this integral because of this two exponential game. It's very unusual because we're used to Minkowski space. So we are not surprised that massless theory produces infrared divergence. But
yeah, I thought there was a calculation that contradicts this. Actually, doesn't.
What is this?
I'm confused about what your point is. You said this is the NN two-point function.
Yes.
But in your language, you said you're calculating the Feynman diagram, not the Springer calculus.
Oh, no. Well, I was vague at the point. I let me clarify.
So
let me clarify this.
Please clarify this.
Yeah. So, in fact, if if we have a stable situation, if we assume that there is a stability, then Feynman and Schwinger-Keldysh should give the same answer. If they give the same answer, then it doesn't matter. Now, however, if we don't assume the stability, if we want to check whether we have stability or not, then we have to use Schwinger-Keldysh approach. In the Schwinger-Keldysh approach, you have a number of terms. In fact, I was quite misleading because I should have said that the coefficient in front of linear divergence in time for Schwinger-Keldysh diagrams is the collision integral. So to get the collision integral, you have to draw the Schwinger-Keldysh, so which means that we have pluses and minuses here. It's a concrete thing because, say, G plus plus is G, say, minus I zero, and G plus minus is G N one and two minus I epsilon sine N one zero minus N two zero and so on. So what I want to say is that it's not some abstract objects. We know them quite explicitly. And we can write down this diagram quite explicitly and see whether the coefficient, there are several terms, each of which diverge, but the non-trivial question is whether the combination is. So the non-zero collision integral means that this diagram will be linearly divergent. But that's not really a problem because it's not a dynamical divergence. I should have said that if I go to massless particle case, here I will get a real really dynamical infrared divergences, which will be, for which all this is not applicable.
So the yes. Phi cubed version of this,
yes.
You know, these guys,
yes.
And they get something that is finite for positive mass. It turns out actually that gets big for small enough mass, which is another matter.
Because yeah, that's enough matter. Let's talk about positive mass. So what is the statement for positive mass?
Well, so he would perhaps take issue with saying that we did this calculation. We did a Euclidean calculation. We quantitated the result.
Yeah.
Doing the Schwinger-Keldysh calculation, although
that's not much harder.
It's hard. Yes.
Hasn't been done as far as I don't know anyone who's explicitly calculated this diagram, but I think there's good reason to believe that the Schwinger-Keldysh diagram does give something which is infrared finite.
Why?
So I think
yes.
Woodard has done this calculation for a massless field.
Yeah. Well,
I don't think his divergence is as strong. You're claiming a linear divergence.
It depends on which time you have. If you
for massless field, linear.
If you have.
It makes sense.
Yeah. You see, let me explain how this. This divergence is in proper time. It's linear. Yes. How to see this? It's just a. It's just the divergence of the. If you look at this integral, let's look first at this integral. This is in 1 plus 1, but this is the same in all dimensions. We can write it down as integral over dz, and the green functions coming from the Legendre polynomial. Remember, we had the Legendre polynomial like that. Which behave like z minus 1/2, z I mu plus z minus I mu. So you get dz divided by z terms in this integral. And those terms give you the logarithm of the maximal value of z. But z is cosh L, so logarithm is basically the invariant length. So it's very hard to avoid this conclusion.
But the invariant length, doesn't give much. In Schwinger-Keldysh, you can always just integrate the past.
But the past is.
And if the past is the cosmological past, the invariant length never gets large.
The what? Well, you see, that's true that if you calculate things, you can essentially, there is a causality. So you go to the past and you have the some step function like n0 minus n0 prime. And so all these integration go to the past, but you still have these divergences now. You still get dz divided by z as you go to minus infinity. You are right. This divergence come from the past. Yes, but so it is actually. So it is when I said. Let's derive in flat space the kinetic equation. The divergence there, since it's Schwinger-Keldysh theory, it also comes from the past. It's the same type of divergence which we encounter in kinetics of the usual gas. And it does come from the past, but this asymptote. You see, this the basic fact is cancellation of two exponents in the Bunch-Davis green function. When you get a square of this, these are two exponents which we have here. In Minkowski space, this will be one exponent with one sign and with the other. And it's the interference between them.
In the distant past, don't we just have one exponent since it's the end?
If you look at the global coordinates, you have the just look at the expression for the green function, which is this. And then you can take Z is the scalar product of some fixed vector n, and the vector n which you, n star which is fixed, and n over which you integrate. And as you go to the past, so you have a hyperboloid, and you go to the infinite past. So you are here.
I'm sorry, in the infinite past and global coordinates, I quite agree here.
So what
if you're doing this in the cosmological expanding patch, you only have one exponential.
You see, actually to go to Poincaré patch, it's true that I did most of calculations in the global, this in the full coordinate system to avoid various problems. As a matter of fact, it's there are some reasons to believe that this is what should be done. However, it's very easy to modify these calculations for the case for the Poincaré patch. Poincaré patch in this invariant term is simply the condition, an extra condition that this you insert the theta function, and this theta function, as far as I can see, doesn't change this divergence.
The Bunch Davies vacuum is positive frequency here in the cosmological horizon.
Well, you see, if it is the Bunch Davies vacuum, if you are right, if you separate, if you use the momentum representation, there is one exponential, but there is an integral over momenta, which will take. It's much easier to do the integration in coordinate space. In coordinate space, you have this is the Bunch Davies vacuum, right? It's the same thing which we should be using, and it is this expression which the only thing which we have to change from the global to go from global to Poincaré is that you have to introduce the step function here, which restricts the region of integration, but there is still infinite past which I think that you cannot get rid of the logarithm. Although I didn't really explore much the geodesically incomplete cases, because I think I try to look at when you have geodesically incomplete case, you have to complete the history somehow. You can, for example, you can join it with a flat space, but you have to do something. Otherwise, theory is not really a theory. You cannot require unitarity, things like that, or composition, because the particle, the path in this universe, they will end somewhere at some boundary. So it is very, very uncomfortable to work with these things. So for that reason, I really worked, well, I actually checked everything carefully in the global coordinates. I believe that, and so it's of course there are more questions than answers here, but I guess there's something to work on in these matters, and we also can even if we. There are various versions of the Sita space. There are versions that we have we created from imaginary. We create the universe from nothing, or the version when we have a global thing, or the version when we match part of the Sita, say Poincaré patch, to the Minkowski space. How should we treat all this? I think we should look at the, even I logically can imagine, I didn't enumerate, classify all possibilities. It could be that for some special configuration, some special embedding of the De Sitter space, we get stability and the cosmological constant will remain there. But that's not what we want. Probably that means that we are living in the global De Sitter space. if suppose for one moment, although I don't believe it, that it's only for the global Bessieger space that we screen the cosmological constant and for the others we don't. But then, so what? That is just as well. It means that we, since it's screened, we conclude that.
Do you have an interpretation of the Gibbons Hawking calculation of entropy associated?
Yeah, that's a very good question. The honest answer to which will be I don't have listened to, but I tried. So I tried, and my interpretation is that it must be. I think it is related to the when we have this adiabatic creation of the Bessieger space. So we start from Minkowskian in the vacuum, and then we go to. We go to Minkowski in the excited state, and this is the arrow of time. I believe that the Gibbons-Hawking entropy must be related to the entropy of particles. You have a very degenerate state at the end, and I think there should be some relation between the Gibbons-Hawking entropy and the logarithm of the number of degenerate state of these massive particles. But I was not able to really do this. I hope something like that should work, but I can't say more. My thinking is that it might be completely irrelevant quantity, the Gibbons-Hawking entropy. Or it may be related to the entropy of created particles. So my point is it's the entropy of created particles, most probably.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thank
you. I think I'll stop here.
So if this is supposed to explain why the cosmological constant is so small at the moment, and
yeah,
still in the process of being screened.
Yes, yes.
What,
unfinished business.
Have you tried to think of any way of testing it?
Well,
how
no.
How should the W depend on?
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't, there's plenty of numbers to play with. For example, this coefficient, I wrote somewhere the kinetic, the rate A for in the kinetic equation. This rate is something like e to the minus, actually that may be also related to the question, to Eva's question, that it's 2 pi m divided by h or something. It's actually of the order of e to minus m divided by Gibbons-Hawking temperature. So I don't know how to interpret Gibbons-Hawking entropy, but Gibbons-Hawking temperature appears very naturally when you calculate those overlap integrals. They're semi-classical. There was a calculation done by Grisha Valerik who showed that it's basically, I think it was one half of Gibbons-Hawking temperature or something like that, which appears in his calculation. But we actually slightly improved his calculation and got the answer for generic overlap integral. So it's basically the question. What I'm saying about, in this unclear way is a simple thing. You have for n particle creation, you have the product of Hankel functions, and these Hankel functions have index mu, where mu is something like the mass divided by Hubble constant. When you take mu to be large, if you take mu to be large, it's exponential, the integral is exponentially suppressed. You can use saddle point to evaluate it. And this settle point gives you the factor. It's the settle point factor with Gibbons forking defining the entropy. So one can try to play to adjust numbers. What is m? What mass should we take? What have I?
Sorry, but in the real world, you would have all the masses that we know of standard model particles, including masses.
No, but.
Why are you focusing on having.
On what? On why?
Why are they heavy?
I mean, some are in the standard model, some are not.
Yeah, but you see, age was changing. Masses are fixed, but age was changing. And when we look at the, there was a period when these particles, well, there is a, I think I missed your question. So what was the question?
What are you trying to estimate, by the way?
What I'm trying to estimate, the time which it takes to screen the cosmological constant. And this time depends on the masses, on the original value of the cosmological constant, and on the, probably also, on the strength of interaction, of course. So you might try to see whether you get something reasonable if you use the numbers. We can take real particles and so on.
But you're trying to figure out, there are two possibilities. I mean, this could change the whole inflation area.
Yes. I think so, but I can't really take seriously the statement that inflation is just some scale or inflaton which does the job.
Sure, but you're working with scalars as toy cases.
Yeah, sure.
But if you were to follow this philosophy for scalar inflatons,
it's not. It's just interacting here. I took scale. It actually could be. I could take interacting other fields of gravitons and so on. So it's not specifically. It was a toy model which I was considering.
So can I ask a question about this?
Yeah.
You focus on mass of particles for which the particle production is small, it's exponentially small, and it's peaked, as you said, at k over a of order m.
Yeah.
But in inflation, you know, we do have some evidence for inflation now, like evidence for super horizon predictions.
Yeah.
So those are produced by the usual mechanism where the field is basically massless, and the production happens at k over a of order Hubble.
So you are asking why I'm working with massive particle and not with massless particle.
Right, and on the one hand, and on the other hand, there is some observational evidence for super horizon predictions.
Okay, good. The answer is very simple. It's just because in massless case, to take it, if we want to work with it seriously, it's much more complicated. The complication comes from the following. I have those amplitudes which enters all these diagrams, which are overlap integrals. For masses case, this is 3/2, not I mu. The integral diverges like mad. The strength of interaction diverges. In these circumstances, when the strength of interaction diverges, there are no reasons why the Boltzmann equation is applicable. I cannot. So I'm doing what I can. That's the real answer. But I keep thinking of how to. I think there is the positive. Well, it's a negative statement actually. But I think that there is no complete understanding of massless case. And in massless case, we have to take into account two infrared divergences, the divergence, kinematical divergence like that, and dynamical divergence coming from the divergence of these overlap integrals. And I think that there is some hope to get it. It's probably, well, but it's too early to say. So I want very much to do the massless case, but not yet. ready for this.
But so what's happened? What about estimates of what's going on now?
Well, I think that the masses case, you indeed need the answer for the small masses to really compare it. That's why I'm not making any statement at the moment about inflation and things like that. It's just at the moment I'm talking about just a possible mechanism, and hopefully you can adjust the numbers and build some models. But, well, I'm just trying to clarify the mechanism itself at the moment, so I have no good answer to this. Yes?
So, this critical time, TC?
Yes.
Does this depend on K, or?
Well, no. It's the whole picture of this inverse cascade or Bozzi. It's just overall amplitude N of T, and you have, by the way, what's an interesting K divided by A. The interesting comment is that precisely very similar Bose C is formed in the Schwinger process. Actually, we analyzed it with a student, with Dima Krotov, my student, that we analyzed what's happening in the electric case. And it turns out that basically, well, in the gauge, when you have a one of t vector potential space component of vector potential, we have the Klein-Gordon equation, which is omega square k minus a one of t square minus m square is zero. And once again, particles are produced when we have a k close to A1 of t is something like so it's adiabatically turned on interaction, and by looking at the de Broglie wavelength, each mode is produced at the moment when it's equal to A1 of t, and the result is that there is a, you feel one mode after another as time goes. There is this moving boundary with time. So you get Bose C. What I'm saying is just that you get Bose C even in this familiar problem of Schwinger. And there are a lot of interesting facts around, but I think we all are too tired to hear them. But
does anyone wake up to ask another question?
All right,
let's thanks, Sasha, again.